from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
The premier baseball show in Chicago, Hit and Run, with special guest host Mark Grody.
And he got all of that one out to right. Juan Soto starting to feel it for the Yankees. Working his first 1-2-3 inning of the fourth. And Juan Soto, you can wave that one goodbye. His second home run of the day. There's a grounder to third, scooped up by Birdie. And that'll do it. It's the Yankees taking game two of this three-game series. They will win the series against the Sox with a 6-1 win.
Less than an inning of work.
Slice the other way. That's a fair ball. That'll get into the corner. Belly's on the move. Reynolds over there, and he'll stop at second. The winning run is in scoring position. Belly at second, one down. 3-2. Line drive, base hit center field. Bellinger to third. On his way home. Here's the throw. The tag. Save. Ball game. Cubs win.
Big time for Christopher Morel. The catcher, Burke, dropped the ball. Bellinger scores. Christopher Morel being mobbed out at second base. The Cubs win it 1-0. What a finish.
Hit and Run with Mark Grody on 670 The Score.
If you watched the Cubs game yesterday, there is nothing better than when there is clearly going to be a play at the plate, as there was in the Cubs 1-0 victory over the Pirates. And the ball squirts loose. You're off the hook. It's free. You are play the song and everybody go home. Let's party. It's all good. It's on in Wrigleyville, because if that ball doesn't squirt out, then we probably got about a 5-minute replay to sit through. And who knows what's going to happen after that. The Cubs do beat the Pirates 1-0, as you heard right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Meantime, the White Sox, well, they basically struck out yesterday. They lost to the Yankees 6-1. Luis Gil looked like a Cy Young Award winner yesterday for the Yankees. He struck out 14 White Sox over six innings. So they also got Juan Soto'd 4-for-4 with a couple of home runs in that game, as the Sox go down by a high five. As we officially welcome you in to Hit and Run, I am Mark Grody. I get to be in today for Matt Spiegel, who is in the Cubs broadcast booth today doing pre- and post-game today. That means Spiegs gets to do the fifth inning of play-by-play. And of course, we will check in with Matt Spiegel a little bit later on. 11:25 is when we will talk to Spiegs from Wrigley Field to get his impressions on this series so far, which has been a very eventful series for the Cubs and for the Pirates, for that matter. So Spiegs coming up a little bit later on. Jim Deshays will join us at 9:30 from the Marquee Sports Network's booth. Also, how about this? 10:30, PCA. Pete Crow Armstrong, Cubs outfielder, will join us at 10:30, and the Paul Sullivan on at noon here on The Score. And we are open. Unlock the phone lines, Sean Sears, 312 644-6767 is the number if you'd like to call. And we are open until 12:45 today, right? We're going straight through to 12:45. Is that right, Sean Sears?
Unlock me!
Yeah. Yes.
That is correct. 12:45.
Yes, that is when Cubs pregame will begin for today. The Cubs and the Pirates rematch out at Wrigley Field once again. We're going to get to all the Shota Imanaga stuff because, I mean, it's just can't quite figure it out what's real and what's not. But, man, he has been fantastic. Again, another 7 shutout innings yesterday. 4 hits, struck out 7, 1 walk over 88 pitches. Now has a 0.84 ERA. He didn't get the win yesterday, but he was dazzling once again. So we're going to zero in on Shota. We will hear from Shota Imanaga. We will hear from Craig Counsell, the manager of the Cubs, as we all try to figure out Shota Imanaga and what this is, what the Cubs are. It's a very interesting team so far to begin the season, to say the absolute least. But I do want to zero in on the end of this game again. Again, it was a Christopher Morel with a scalding single to center field. Cody Bellinger chugging around third and eventually slides in safely. And we're going to do this. We're going to do the dueling broadcasts of this because, of course, as you heard some of it in Sean Sears' intro, the elation of Pat Hughes, the elation of Boog Shambi, of course, and the game's over and we're dancing and it's all good. But when you hear the Pirates broadcast, it's not just depression. It's not just game's over, goodbye, everybody. There's some anger. They thought that they got robbed. So this is going to be interesting to hear both of these calls right now on the end of the game. Let's begin with Pat Hughes's call of the walk-off win for the Cubs yesterday.
Here's the 3-2 now from Bednar. Swinging a line drive, base hit to center. Bellinger had to hold up. Rounding third, he's heading home. The throw to the plate, he slides. He is safe. He is safe. Cubs win the ball game. The catcher, Bart, dropped the ball. Bellinger scores. Christopher Morel being mobbed out at second base. The Cubs win it 1-0. What a finish.
He dropped the ball. It was a hell of a finish for the Cubs, and that's the way it felt. But let's take a listen now to Pirates Television, right, Sean?
Sportsnet Pittsburgh, okay. Apparently.
Okay. Let's hear their perspective of the Cubs' game-winning hit yesterday at Wrigley Field.
And a base hit to center field. Taylor coming on. Runner headed to the plate. The throw is going to be... Oh, did he get him? No! Safe, he dropped the ball. Bart is claiming he had the ball and was pulling it out of his glove on the exchange, but for now, it's a walk-off, and it will stay a walk-off RBI single.
And they're going to take a look at it here, Brownie. Derek Shelton in the dugout was given the headphone saying, and why not take a look at it? You got nothing to lose here, right? Does he have the ball? And then as he's coming up, oh, yeah, he's holding it, and it looks like Bellinger knocks it out.
Yeah, he's trying to hold it up, so he said, I got right. him. Now, did he get him out, though?
After reviewing the call on the field, it's confirmed the runner is safe.
What are we doing? Are you kidding me?
That's
I don't understand it.
Oh, sorry, Brownie. Brownie was upset. That's Greg Brown on Pirates Television. I know him a little bit. He's actually a really nice guy, but boy, is he fiercely loyal. Yeah, Sammy. Fiercely loyal to the Pittsburgh Pirates. And what they were arguing was that Cody Bellinger's left hand knocked the ball out of the catcher's hand. Now, it did. That did occur, but it was completely incidental and accidental. He did not try. From what I saw, and Sean and I were reviewing the video fiercely ourselves before the show started, just in case we missed something, but it didn't look to me like Cody Bellinger had any any intention of trying to swat the ball out of the hands of the catcher. And if he had, that's an incredible play. Like, that's Javier Baez stuff.
Yeah, there's no way he was meaning to do it. I think he was surprised to see the ball laying next to him when he was at home plate. But we did see the home plate umpire. It looked like he was going to call Bellinger out until he saw the ball roll out. Then he's like, well, he's safe.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, man.
And then I was like, ooh, this might get interesting.
He cocked that arm back, the umpire, man. He was getting ready to do it. And, like, there would have been a replay. And I do think that that would have been one of those plays, just from watching it over and over, that he might have gotten under it anyway.
Yeah.
I think the Cubs probably still win the game, but it would have been close, and there would not have been any kind of guarantee. So I don't think Brownie's disgust is necessarily justified. I hope that he also watched the play several times and got to see that Bellinger did not try to knock the ball out. At least I don't think so. Did Belly say anything about it after the game?
I don't believe he talked specifically about that play.
Okay.
Like, he talked about it. He said he thought he was a little slow going around third.
Oh, yeah. Well, he did. He was chugging.
I was surprised when I was like, oh, he's only there? Yeah.
Those long legs and long arms chugging. You'd think he can move a little bit better just because he's got that slim thing going on. But also, let's hear from the Pirates manager, Derek Shelter. Who's it?
Derek Shelton.
Okay. I thought you said Mike Schilt for a second. Derek Shelton, go.
Yeah, I mean, the umpires, all they get is a confirmed or stands or are overturned. So the replay umpires will make that call, and then they just give them one of the three options. I mean, the way I saw the play is there's a presentation of the ball. There's a voluntary presentation of the ball. It anything, like when there's a fly ball in the outfield, where there's a fly ball in the infield, my interpretation is that Joey presented the ball. And, I mean, there's another runner on base, so he's presenting the ball to show the umpire that he's out. So you see him secure, you see tag, you see him take the ball out, and then there's contact with Bellinger. The way, you know, again, I see it is that's voluntary that he's taking the ball out and that it's a tag.
Involuntary. I did not think that he would try to swat that ball out. So that's Pirates manager Derek Shelton right there. It's incredible. I mean, I saw texts about this play before I even got in here today. So I know that you guys were itching to break this down. I mean, from the Cubs' perspective, when you get the game-winning hit and it's over, you just get out of there. Morrell with the hit, scoring Bellinger, and the Cubs get to go home winners. 312-644-6767. I see some of you guys jumping in here. We'll get to some of your calls here in just a little bit. But yes, we do have to talk about Shota Imanaga as well, because, oh man, I mean, it just, like, you just keep waiting or wondering if things are going to start to, I guess, normalize a little bit, come down a little bit. But And his start previous to yesterday, it felt like that a little bit, where he didn't seem to have the greatest stuff, but he was terrific again yesterday. 7 shutout innings, 4 hits, 7 strikeouts, 1 walk, again, 88 pitches. I'll tell you what's great about him, man. He has some fast innings. Like, there's always, like in the second inning yesterday, 6-pitch second inning, when he does have traffic, he doesn't seem to get flustered. He had 2 on in the 7th and struck out Michael Taylor. The near home run by Andrew McCutchen, which, you know, just went to the left of the foul pole in left field. And I love Shota's reactions to those kinds of things, because he just kind of looks at it and smiles, shakes his head, and gives that, like, whew. Thank God that thing didn't go out. So Shota doing his thing. Imanaga lowered his ERA, like I said, to 0.84 through his first 9 major league starts. The lowest mark through 9 since earned run average started being tracked as a stat by baseball in 1913. He won 5 of them without a loss and was dominant again, of course, yesterday. Let's start with Craig Counsell on Shota Imanaga. Mr. Counsell, sir, are you surprised about what Shota Imanaga is doing?
As someone who's played in the league a long time, are you surprised at all that we've gone this far and nobody's been able to figure out Shota?
I mean, I think you have to say it, because when you start like looking at the historic, you know, stuff that he's doing, you look at the history of the game, and John was giving me some numbers. You know, when you start getting in this territory, you have to be a little surprised for sure. But we're fortunate to watch it. It's been so much fun to watch, and you know, he just his aptitude out there, how he, his pitch making ability, his stuff, his competitiveness, they've all just been just a joy to watch. It's been, you know, so much fun to watch him.
I will say this, Craig Counsell is not prone to hyperbole in any way, shape, or form. And you can kind of tell there's that, like, this guy's been around baseball for a long time, obviously, as a player and as a manager. So he is trying to contain himself in terms of raising the plaudits to go over the top. But it is getting to that point where I mean, we all know he's not going to have a zero-something ERA by the end of the season, but that's besides the point. Is Shota Imanaga going to end up being a top-five guy for Cy Young by the end of the season? That's the long view you could take. That's what you have to start to potentially anticipate or wonder in your brain if that is the case with Shota Imanaga. And, man, we went through this last year, or maybe I'll just point the thumb and say, I went through this last year with Justin Steele, to where every start was just spectacular in that first half of the season, the first couple of months especially. I was very skeptical. The reason I was skeptical of Justin Steele is because everybody was saying that he was going to be good out of the gates based on what he had done the previous year, and I am always just a little bit skeptical when things happen, when the lights are off and your team is bad and there's no pressure and the lights are out, so to speak. And that's the way it was for Justin Steele. But we went through this last year with him, start after start after start after start. And then at some point in time, you just have to say, okay, this guy is really good. This is who he is. And guess what? Justin Steele ended up being top five for the Cy Young last year. I don't know if I'm ready to say that with Shota Imanaga yet, because at some point in time, he's probably going to struggle. I mean, there's going to be that period, and we'll see if he can overcome that and adjust to it. But I'm certainly not counting out the possibility that he's top five for Cy Young eventually. I mean, heck, we could do this with Javier Assad as well, because right now he would be in the mix for that. These are the Cubs' two most valuable players to begin the season. So it is fascinating to watch what Shota Imanaga has done. Before I jump on a couple of your calls, let's hear from Shota Imanaga. The same question. Are you surprised, sir, about what you are doing? This is through his interpreter.
Talking about tough starts, even today I felt like there was a couple of tough situations where the defense made fantastic plays. And so I know that there has been a couple of tough situations so far in the season. So I'll just continue and keep doing better.
Yeah, I watched a lot of that press conference live, and he said he's not really paying attention to the statistics and the historical value. I guess he doesn't have to, because everybody else is going to tell him about it. But I think he has the right attitude. Stay in the present and just enjoy it. And maybe that's the message to Cubs fans and baseball fans. And maybe I should just accept that as a message. Just enjoy what's going on with Shota Imanaga and the fact that it's working. Because you know how we are as radio hosts and you as Cubs fans. If Shota had a start that was opposite of this in any way, shape, or form, then you're like, oh, man, this is a bad signing. What the hell's going on with the Shota Imanaga guy who was supposed to help this team? And right now, he is not only the MVP of this team, he has kept this team in order as well. Cubs are 26-21, two games out of first place. The Brewers did win yesterday as well, but what he has done for this team so far, and I take the beginning of seasons very seriously, has been just irreplaceable so far for the Cubs this year. 312-644-6767 is the number. We've got Jim Deshays coming up in a bit, but we've got some time to take a couple of your calls before Jimmy D comes on with us. You know what, Sean? Bring me Dave and Darian. Dave from Darian, you're on the score. What's going on, man?
Hey, Mark. Love when you're on, buddy.
Thanks.
So I just wanted to make a couple of comments quickly about yesterday's call. It was interesting, and I love the fact that you got a homer perspective. You're never going to get away from that. Everybody's subjective, right? So the other thing I mentioned, though, I was listening carefully to the verbiage. When the umpires made that call or reviewed it, they said the call's confirmed. And to me, that says New York looked at it and said not just the call stands, there wasn't enough to overturn it, but they clearly saw something. And I think Bellinger actually got his foot in onto the plate before the tag was applied. That was just my
I think so, too. Of course, I agree. Yeah. I agree with that, Dave. Even in real time, I agree with that.
Yeah. And secondly, I heard a guy in the score predict the other day that the Cubs are going to win the World Series, which to me is I'm optimistic, but I wasn't over the moon with them this year. But it is interesting the depth on the squad, considering they've been a MASH unit and they've been subjected to how many injuries have we had? Significant injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And they've still been able to weather the storm, and they really are loaded at the minor league level. And it would be interesting to see what Jed does at the trading deadline too. I think there's some major moves coming for this team if they continue to stay in contention, and obviously they're playing quite well, but they need some help. And I think, you know, with the bullpen and offensively, they've been very average lately, and it would be interesting to get your perspective on that moving forward.
Yeah, man. Thanks, Dave. I appreciate the call and the kind words as well. Well, there's one name that we'll focus on in terms of getting help at the major league level, and that is Cade Horton, as, you know, one of their top prospects as a pitcher. He could be coming soon, that's for sure. And to your point, like, I don't know. I don't look at the Cubs as winning the World Series this year. I really, that's not where I have my sights set for the Cubs this year. But to your point about keeping this team together and the depth that it has shown, the Cubs began the season without, in theory, their two of their top pitchers, and certainly their ace in Justin Steele, who has struggled, but I think Steele's going to get his bleep together. I do believe that. But the guy that's pitching today, Jameson Taillon, began the day on the season on the DL as well. So you go into a season, I mean, just keep it right there. And then you lose Seiya for a little while. You lose Cody Bellinger, maybe your best overall offensive player. Right now, man, watching and looking at second and shortstop, I got to say, for the most part, Miles Mastroboni has been pretty good at shortstop. There was the play yesterday where he kind of sat back on a routine ground ball, and the Pirates player beat it out. He sat back. He needed to move in a little bit, know the base runner. But for the most part, Mastroboni has surprised me with his ease over at shortstop. Madrigal playing second base. So you have been playing lately with, you know, Dansby Swanson last year for half of the season, I thought was your absolute best player. He has had a rough and tumble start to the season offensively and defensively. He's been doing things that have surprised me with a lot of low throws from short to first. It reminds me a little bit of a stretch that Addison Russell went through back in 2016 where he just could not get the, remember all those low throws in the dirt and Rizzo having to scoop him, and Michael Busch has just been average over at first in terms of the scoop. I think that he's getting better, but the Cubs have managed to stay afloat in the division and be right there just a couple of games behind the Milwaukee Brewers. Paul in Valpo, what's going on, Paul? You're on the Score.
Hey, good morning, Mark. I, like the previous caller said, I think they're going to make some moves, and you know, the minor league system is stocked. But one thing I just can't, you just mentioned a bunch of players in the way that hasn't been injured or maybe he's injured mentally, is Ian Happ. I cannot stand to watch him back. That was the best thing to watch a Cubs game in those couple days that Council gave him off. I know with his contract they're not getting rid of him, but what about bring up a Brendan Davis who is on fire in AAA right now? He's 24 years old. He's not one of the younger prospects where you might not want to rush. He's been around. He's had some injury issues, but catch him while he's hot and give Happ some real days off. I mean, he's good defensively, but he's a left fielder that has two home runs and 14 RBIs. It's painful to watch him bat. We talk a lot about the bullpen and other things that have kind of sidetracked this team, injuries, but he is just, you can't have him in the lineup.
Yeah, no, I agree, because I don't think he's had a hit since the home run, possibly. Remember, he took the two mental days off, the mental break, as they call it, the benching. And he comes back, gets a home run. I don't know. In that game, I remember, it was the Thursday game. Pirates win over the Cubs 5-4. And, yeah, he hits the early home run. And that, I know he didn't have another hit that day because I remember the eighth inning, the Cubs had second and third with nobody out, and they only got one run out of it. And I don't think it was Happ that got on.
He did get a hit on the 17th.
Okay.
So in that 9-3 loss.
What have I told you about correcting me, Sean? I got a thing over here. You know what I'm saying? No, I appreciate that. So he has had one hit since the home run?
Yes, one hit since the home run.
Okay. So, yeah, because everybody's sort of dwelling on that. Like, okay, we have to, like, there were three more at-bats in that game. He gets the one hit in the 9-3 loss to the Pirates. That was the Skeens game.
Yeah.
Skeens. The 11 strikeouts and one walk. And by the way, one of the reasons that we're having PCA on, not only do Sean Sears and I love him, how about that contact he made against Paul Skeens?
Yeah.
Seven straight strikeouts and then a ground out, the most important ground out.
We got
out.
A ball in play, baby. Look out now.
I was like, thank God. I was like, come on, Paul Skeens. You can't strike everybody out. Don't do that. Don't do that to yourself.
He sure as heck tried, man.
Oh, yeah. Do you think he would have gotten a no-hitter?
Ooh.
I mean, the Cubs were starting to make contact off of him. Not anything. They weren't squaring it up, but they were starting to hit the baseball. And he goes six shutout innings, and they pulled him. I mean, I knew they were going to do that.
I think Shelton pulled him at the right time. I feel like the seventh inning coming along here, maybe a couple walks, suddenly a single turns into a two-run play. I felt like that was coming. So, right time to pull him.
Yeah.
He had the stuff to do it, though, for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible stuff. I was talking about this a little bit yesterday. We all like to place a name, a comp, a parallel with these guys, and I certainly go the Mark Pryor route, and that specifically is because Mark Pryor had his first two starts against the Pittsburgh Pirates, and he was dazzling in both of them. His debut, Pryor's, in May of 2022, just terrific. And so that's when Pryor was called up. Same thing for Paul Skeens, called up in May, his first two starts against the Cubs, and they were absolutely dazzling starts. I just hope Paul Skeens stays healthy. It seems like these guys never do, including the tragic story of Mark Pryor. Let's take our first break here on Hit and Run. I get to be here until 12:45. Coming up next, we will talk to Jim Deshays, Cubs TV broadcaster for the Marquee Sports Network. Coming up next right here on The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
Hey, bada 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 bada, so we bada. Hey, bada 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 bada, so we bada. Kennedy, so we bada.
On 670, The Score.
This is where Christopher Morel has gotten so much better to control these moments. Stay in the at-bat and not expand. Not easy to do.
Belly at second, one down. 3-2. Line drive, base hit center field. Bellinger to third, on his way home. Here's the throw, the tag. Safe! Ball game, Cubs win.
Chris Conroy, the home plate umpire, was starting to crank that right arm like he was going to ring him up. Then he thought better of it. Big time for Christopher Morel.
Put that arm down, Conroy. Safe. Great call by Boog Chombi and Jim Deshays on the Marquee Sports Network. Cubs win. 1-0 over the Pittsburgh Pirates. Shota Imanaga put on a show. But that final play, man, that is perfect for a beautiful Saturday at Wrigley Field. Welcome back into Hit and Run. I am Mark Grody, in for Matt Spiegel. We're going to talk to Pete Crow Armstrong in 1 hour from now, 10:30. We'll also talk to Speaks, who I assume is probably already at the ballpark because he's doing pre and post starting at 12:45 today, and then he gets to do some play-by-play in the fifth inning as well. But one of the guys that I wanted to have on the show, even before the Cubs game started, was Jim DeShays. Jim DeShays, Cubs TV broadcaster for the Marquee Sports Network. He is on X at Jim DeShays, DeShays. I like to spell that because it is just a little bit complicated. And Jim DeShays joins us right now on the Circa Sports Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. What's going on, Jim? How are you, man?
Hi, Mark. I'm great. Yeah, that name, it took me to about the third grade before I could spell it correctly. So I don't know what all those freaking vowels are doing in there for no reason. But
seriously,
it
man.
Is what it is. Yeah,
it is rough. I bet that thing is a bitch on spell check, too.
Yeah, a lot of AYS shows up.
Yeah, I almost, Jim, stumbled through it while I was reading. I'm like, oh, my God, that's right. There's an E before the S and an A and an I, all of those vowels. But I loved your call, man, yesterday because I saw the same thing you did, and that's the home plate umpire. He was about to bark and out, and you know it was going to go to replay. So it was just a relief, like I said, when you see that ball squirt out, just this relief, I think, came over everybody at Wrigley Field.
Yeah, it was a weird play because the ball kind of pops out of his throwing hand kind of after the play, but it's considered, you know, a continuation of the whole play. So they got it right. The more we looked at the replay, I think he beat the tag anyway. It looked to me like he got the toe there just before the tag was applied. But either way, a heck of a win and a heck of a performance by Imanaga.
Unbelievable. I mean, what do you make of Imanaga?
Yeah, well, this whole notion that, you know, it's going to be tough to transition from Japan to the States, well, so much for that.
Yeah.
He's been brilliant. You know, the reputation we heard when he came over was, you know, really good control. He can pitch to the top of the zone with a four-seam fastball, and he's got a swing and miss splitter. And it seemed to me like the emphasis was on the split finger pitch, and what we're realizing is that four-seam fastball is probably his best weapon. It reminds me of Fernando Valenzuela, Fernando Mania, when he went nuts his rookie year when he had like seven shutouts through his first eight or nine starts. And I think, you know, the national baseball audience is starting to get caught up in Imanaga, and clearly it's a thing here in Chicago. And we'll just see how long he can ride it.
How about his demeanor on the mound, too? He looks like a guy who, and we haven't seen him struggle yet, so I don't know if he's going to have those smiles if he does get to the point of struggling, but there's a point in the game yesterday where Andrew McCutchen wallops one to left field, well foul, but Imanaga just looked at it and had that look of relief and kind of a smile and shaking his head. You don't usually see that sort of playfulness out of starting pitchers like you do with him.
Yeah, we're all taught to be very stoic and, you know, don't get caught up in the emotions of the game. But, yeah, he clearly does. So I'd imagine if he ever does have a bad one, we're going to see that on his face as well. But, yeah, he's very expressive. He has a lot of personality. And, you know, so for that reason, as well as the performance, I think fans have fallen in love with him.
Yeah, no doubt about it. There was Taylor McGregor had a great report, and you followed up on it as well. But she was talking about the idea of what she called and what you call Shota Imanaga's invisible fastball. Can you explain that concept or what you guys are talking about with that?
Yeah, that idea that the players call it the invisible. It's basically when a guy who's throwing what is, you know, by velocity, by today's standards, is a tick or two below major league average, but still able to get swings and misses and bad contact in the strike zone. It's just the characteristics of that pitch, you know, the backspin on the four-seam fastball that the hitter expects this ball to kind of go down as it approaches the hitting zone because of gravity, and if we want to get all sciencey here. But when you have a lot of backspin on a four-seam fastball, it defies gravity to an extent. So it doesn't actually rise, but it stays on plane longer, and guys are constantly underneath it. And it's very difficult as a hitter to convince yourself to take a swing path that's over the top of the baseball. But that's what you have to do to hit it squarely.
Yeah,
that was great. We'll actually play some of that a little bit later on for the audience that didn't get a chance to hear that on the Marquee Sports Network. We are talking to Cubs broadcaster Jim DeShays. I'm Mark Grody, sitting in for Matt Spiegel on Hit and Run, who will be doing pre and post a little bit later on, 12:45, right here on The Score in the final game of this very entertaining series between the Cubs and the Pirates. And that's exactly what this series has been. I mean, a close one on Thursday. That was the Justin Steele game where the Pirates end up beating the Cubs 5-4. The Friday entertainment, man. I mean, in terms of Paul Skenes, what he did, Pirates go on to win that game 9-3. Let's talk a little bit about some of the things that went down in that game. First of all, I mean, I have to ask you about your impressions of Paul Skenes and the 11th strikeout performance and the 7 straight before the PCA ground out.
Yeah, he's a beast, and he's going to be tough to deal with for years to come as long as he stays healthy. As a matter of fact, he and the Jones kid who worked game one of that series, both.
Yeah, really good.
The Pirates, it's hard not to be bullish on the future of the Pirates, that 1-2 punch. And, you know, Mitch Keller goes today. I think Keller's only 28-ish, and he's turned into a really good starting pitcher. So, you know, their position players are a little bit behind. But if they can add a couple bats, they're going to be really interesting. Skenes is it reminds me of Strasburg with all the hype when Strasburg first came up, and Strasburg delivered. You probably recall 14 strikeouts in his debut against the Pirates, and it was, you know, everybody in the industry was glued to their TVs watching that game, and the stuff was electric. And that's the same thing with Skenes, because the fastball gets all the headlines, but the secondary pitches are, you know, that splinker, the half splitter, half sinker he throws at 95 is devastating. His slider's really good. He's shown a good changeup. So for a kid who's, 21 years old, he's the complete package, and he seems really poised out there. So I don't think there's going to be much of a learning curve. This guy's, you know, he's going to be at the top of the game. He's just a stud.
Just hope he stays healthy, man. I mean, I was at an event earlier this week in Chicago, and Jack McDowell just happened to be there. Jack McDowell has opinions on everything these days, but I kind of bought into his opinion about why, you know, pitchers, we're all wondering, why do these pitchers get hurt? And it seems like it's guys like Strasburg and Mark Pryor and these guys that eventually just have really nasty injuries that in some cases shorten their careers. But McDowell's take was that, you know, guys are just throwing too hard, that they are just maxing out on every pitch. And this is what base GMs and managers desire to have. Do you have a theory on it? And do you think Skenes has the right mechanics, I suppose, to stay healthy? And I know that's not everything.
Yeah, I do agree that velocity is part of the problem, velocity and spin, and this is just my opinion. I don't have any medical data to back it up. But I don't think it's a case where managers and general managers are asking pitchers to chase velocity. Pitchers are chasing velocity because velocity gets people out. And as a pitcher, as a competitor, if you have the ability to throw 100 miles an hour, you're going to throw 100 miles an hour. That's just human nature. I think the challenge going forward is recognizing that. What do teams do to try to better protect pitchers? You know, we've gotten so much better about studying biomechanics and load management. And I think maybe as much as we grouse about pitch counts, whether it's pitch counts or extra days rest between starts, I think that's one way to possibly preserve starting pitching. Because we love the ace, right? We want to look. Well, here's an old guy. Look in the morning paper or look on the internet for the pitching matchup and go, oh, you know, Skenes is going against Justin Steele today. I'm going to try to get a ticket to that game.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's when I was a kid, that was the thing. We looked at the pitching matchups and, hey, Seaver's going in Montreal tonight, Dad.
Oh,
let's
yeah.
go. I think the way to, and when that guy only goes 5 innings, we're disappointed. So I think the way to maybe get more out of our starters is to just pitch them less frequently. Every 6 day or whatever, or find a couple days extra rest with if they're coming off a start where they threw, you know, 110 pitches or really had to labor to get through the start. Maybe that's one way to fix it. And, you know, they're doing all kinds of other studies and they're, you know, plugging guys into machines and they're getting all kinds of reads on, how their body reacts to certain situations. But I don't think we can ask guys with the golden arms not to try to throw as hard as they can throw.
Yeah, it's really, really tough like that. We know that there's tons of that in the bullpen these days, and the Cubs are obviously no exception to that. What do you make of this Cubs season? It's really hard to characterize just because of all the injuries. And I want to say that the Cubs at 26 and 21, that because they've had all these injuries and guys in and out of the lineup, you begin the season with maybe your two best pitchers on the DL, that once they get this whole thing together, they're going to absolutely blast off. But then on the other side, there's been, you know, guys like Dansby Swanson, who's had a rough start to the season. Edward Alzolay, same thing. Kyle Hendricks as well. So how do you characterize this team, and how do you see it going forward?
Yeah, I think it's kind of remarkable they are where they are, given some of the performances and the injuries that they've had to deal with. So, yeah, one way to look at it is if these guys return to form and they get healthy, you have the makings of a really good ball club. I think they're probably the best team in the division. I'm a little bit surprised that Milwaukee has played as well as they have played. Yeah. So, you know, we're past the quarter pole in the season, so you have to kind of start to believe that they're for real. But, you know, I'm not too worked up about anybody else in the division. So, you know, this could play out. Cubs, Brewers, all the way to the finish line. Yeah, Dansby's going to hit better, obviously, than what he's shown. Ian Happ's going to hit better than what he has shown. Mm. You know, defensively, it's been a little wobbly, and that's surprising. And hopefully that gets tightened up going forward. I think starting pitching is a strength. The bullpen remains a question. So that's, you know, I'm sure that's the one thing that Jed and Carter are out there, you know, scanning the waiver wires and, you know, checking in with clubs all the time, you know, clubs that are likely to be sellers at the deadline to see who's available. But I would suspect a couple of moves at some point to bolster the bullpen.
I've been talking about Kyle Hendricks the last couple of days, and the thing that comes up when we discuss Kyle Hendricks, and I think it's the correct word, it's a complicated situation because for a couple of reasons. Because of the resume of what Kyle Hendricks has meant to the Cubs, and because we know that Hendricks always hits a spot during the season where you're like, oh man, has this guy lost it? Is this low velocity finally catching up with him? And then he becomes brilliant again. He gave up 7 runs the other day in the Paul Skeens game, over 4 2/3, 4 strikeouts, gave up a home run. How would you handle Kyle Hendricks if you were Craig Counsell?
Yeah, you know, to me, I would give him, you know, more time. They're going to need it. They need starting pitching. They need somebody to go out there, you know. But you know, Wicks is starting to get healthy. Smiley's coming back and may be an option. So you know, the leash won't be, you know, never ending. But the thing that intrigues me about Hendricks is when I look at his velo, it's the same as last year. When I look at the action on his changeup, it looks like Kyle Hendricks. So the stuff with which he has pitched to be a very good pitcher for a very long time seems to still be there. He's had a few starts where he's just made a lot of mistakes over the middle of the plate and gotten hurt. 2 starts ago, he didn't. I was really encouraged by his last start against Pittsburgh, in Pittsburgh. And then he made a couple mistakes the other day and paid for it. They also hit, you know, they hit some balls off the end of the bat, you know, some little flares that dropped in, some soft ground balls that got through. He wasn't great, but he was better than what those numbers were. His line at the end of the day, he pitched better than that line. So, you know, and he seems to, you know, he's very good at understanding his own performance. And he said so after the game, because honestly, he goes, it's kind of weird to say this, but I only think I made a couple of mistakes.
Yeah.
And he's also the guy that'll tell you if he ends up with a 7-inning, 1-run performance, he'll go, man, I got lucky today. I gave up a lot of hard contact and got away with it.
That's true.
So it's not like he's, you know, some guys try to talk through the press to try to convince themselves or their manager that he's not that guy. He honestly believes that he, you know, he was a lot better the other day than the numbers indicate. And I agree with him. The problem is when you don't generate a lot of swings and misses and you don't get strikeouts, you do become vulnerable to ball and play luck. And, you know, I think that's taken a bite out of him, as well as, you know, some subpar performances in the long ball. But I'm, you know, I still, I still think he's got a chance to bounce back and end up ending up having a pretty productive year.
Yeah, I mean, ironically, I thought we were going to see vintage Hendricks in that Pirates game because he did give up the leadoff single followed by three straight groundouts. I'm like, okay, here we go. This is going to be, you know, contact guy versus strikeout guy, right?
Yeah, it was a fun matchup. I was geeked up for it because you got the guy throwing 101, and then you got the professor out there doing his thing with the 88 mile an hour fastball, and you know, all the experience versus the newbie, and you know, obviously velocity won out in that one.
Last guy I want to ask you about, because Sean Sears tells me I have to hang up now and let you go. I'm selling out Sean Sears over there. You mentioned Christopher Morel. Saying that with that hit he had yesterday, I think it was a two-strike count, and you mentioned control the moment, and that's what it is for Christopher Morel. If he does continue to control the moment, what can this guy be?
Yeah, I mean, if he forces pitchers into the strike zone, he does so much damage. And, you know, his strikeout rate is way down from last year to this year. It's got to be one of the biggest drops in MLB. It's been really impressive. You know, that at-bat he took yesterday a couple of years ago, you know, he's swinging wildly at something off the plate.
Yep.
But he didn't, and he forced. I was surprised they threw a pitch as close to the zone as they did on the game-winning base hit. They had a base open. I thought they'd throw another chase pitch and try to get him to expand. But, you know, they threw it out over the plate a little bit, and he put a real good swing out. So, yeah, the discipline has improved greatly, and you couple that with the bat speed, the power, he's going to be able to do a lot of damage. I don't think he's ever going to be a high average hitter, but he's going to do a lot of damage.
Jim, thanks a lot for your time. Always appreciate when you come on. Have a great broadcast today, and say hi to Matt Spiegel, Cubs broadcaster, for us, will you?
I will do that indeed, Mark. Good to be with you, and I'll look for a little trivia from Speaks.
All right, man. I'll talk to you later, Jim.
All right. Be well.
Yep. That is Jim Deshaies, one of the greats in that Cubs booth. He is, as you hear him, he is just like that. In my 3 years doing the Cubs pre and post, he was just a steady force in that booth. And on the buses and the planes and the hotels, Jim Deshaies of the Marquee Sports Network. Coming up at 10:30, Pete Crow Armstrong. More Hit and Run next on The Score.
Hit and Run with Mark Grody on 670 The Score.
And he got all of that one out to right. Juan Soto starting to feel it for the Yankees. We are all tied up at first, one apiece. First 1-2-3 inning of the fourth, and Juan Soto, you can wave that one goodbye. His second home run of the day. And it is scary how locked in Juan Soto is right now.
White Sox got the full Yankees experience yesterday. They lose to the Bronx Bombers. 6-1, the final score. John Schriffen on the call on NBC Sports Chicago. Juan Soto, 4-for-4 with a couple of home runs. It was a rough second start for Brad Keller as he gave up 4 home runs in this game. And one thing I noticed watching that game is there were probably about 3 separate times where Yankees hitters maybe like popped out against Brad Keller or grounded out or maybe even struck out. And they did the pound the bat thing, you know, wanted to break the bat over their knee, which pisses off pitchers. I mean, that's that they do look at that as being shown up, but that tells you that Yankees lineup was chomping at the bit to get up to the plate to face this guy.
Well, everything was leaving, man. Like, yeah. Jose Trevino's home run was like 317.
Oh, that got out. That was just a smack to left field to, you know, 318 in left field. He was one of the guys. Luis Trevino got a home run, and then on another at-bat, he pops out and bangs the bat down. Like he felt he... The Yankees hitters felt they were entitled to home runs against Brad Keller.
Give us that
yesterday.
321, man. Come on.
Yeah, that's a bad sign when he's out there. And then the antithesis was Luis Gil, spelled G-I-L, by the way. 14 strikeouts over six innings, 98 pitches. At one point, he struck out seven White Sox in a row, also retired 11 straight at one point. So it was just a dominant game in a lot of ways for the Yankees, 6-1 over the White Sox. Sox and Yankees rematch today. Good pitching matchup. Chris Flexen against Carlos Rodon.
We've heard of him before.
Yeah, Carlos Rodon. What's he doing so far this year? 4-2 with a 3.31 ERA. We'll talk more White Sox a little bit later on. Like I said, I was at a White Sox event earlier this week at the Chicago History Museum. I want to talk a little bit about that. And the guy who also threw out the first pitch at the Yankees-White Sox game, who Yankees fans love and White Sox fans love. So we'll get into that in a little bit. But I want to ask Cubs fans a question here, too. I sort of got into it with Jim DeShays in asking about how the Cubs have done what they have done. Number one, and maybe this is an easy question, who has been the most valuable player for the Cubs so far in this 26-21 season? And what do you see for the Cubs, then, let's say, middle of the summer when baseball is ruling, like in July or so before Bears training camp? Where do you think this Cubs team will be? Do you think they're still going to be hanging around 26-21, or do you think they're going to blast off? Right now is a good time to get in. 312-644-6767. You could text or call. Pete Crow Armstrong coming our way at 10:30 as well. It's Hit and Run with Mark Grody on the Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
If your day sounds like,
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or track pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
The premier baseball show in Chicago, Hit and Run, with special guest host Mark Grody.
And he got all of that one out to right. Juan Soto starting to feel it for the Yankees. Working his first 1-2-3 inning of the fourth. And Juan Soto, you can wave that one goodbye. His second home run of the day. There's a ground at a third, scooped up by Birdie. And that'll do it. It's the Yankees taking game two of this three-game series. They will win the series against the Sox with a 6-1 win.
Less than an inning of work.
Slice the other way. That's a fair ball. That'll get into the corner. Belly's on the move. Reynolds over there, and he'll stop at second. The winning run is in scoring position. Belly at second, one down. 3-2. Line drive, base hit center field. Bellinger to third, on his way home. Here's the throw, the tag. Safe! Ball game, Cubs win.
Big time for Christopher Morel. The catcher, Bart, dropped the ball. Bellinger scores. Christopher Morel being mobbed out at second base. The Cubs win it 1-0. What a finish.
Hit and Run with Mark Grody on 670 The Score.
If you watched the Cubs game yesterday, there is nothing better than when there is clearly going to be a play at the plate, as there was in the Cubs 1-0 victory over the Pirates. And the ball squirts loose. You're off the hook. It's free. You are play the song and everybody go home. Let's party. It's all good. It's on in Wrigleyville, because if that ball doesn't squirt out, then we probably got about a 5-minute replay to sit through. And who knows what's going to happen after that. The Cubs do beat the Pirates 1-0, as you heard right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Meantime, the White Sox, well, they basically struck out yesterday. They lost to the Yankees 6-1. Luis Gil looked like a Cy Young Award winner yesterday for the Yankees. He struck out 14 White Sox over 6 innings. So they also got Juan Soto'd 4-for-4 with a couple of home runs in that game as the Sox go down by a high 5. As we officially welcome you in to Hit and Run, I am Mark Grody. I get to be in today for Matt Spiegel, who is in the Cubs broadcast booth today doing pre- and post-game today. That means Spiegs gets to do the fifth inning of play-by-play. And, of course, we will check in with Matt Spiegel a little bit later on. 11:25 is when we will talk to Spiegs from Wrigley Field to get his impressions on this series so far, which has been a very eventful series for the Cubs and for the Pirates, for that matter. So Spiegs coming up a little bit later on. Jim Deshaies will join us at 9:30 from the Marquee Sports Network's booth. Also, how about this? 10:30, PCA. Pete Crow Armstrong, Cubs outfielder, will join us at 10:30. And the Paul Sullivan on at noon here on The Score. And we are open. Unlock the phone lines, Sean Sears. 312-644-6767 is the number if you'd like to call. And we are open until 12:45 today, right? We're going straight through to 12:45. Is that right, Sean Sears?
Unlock me!
Yeah. Yes.
That is correct.
12:45. Yes, that is when Cubs pregame will begin for today. The Cubs and the Pirates rematch out at Wrigley Field once again. We're going to get to all the Shota Imanaga stuff because, I mean, it's just can't quite figure it out what's real and what's not. But, man, he has been fantastic. Again, another 7 shutout innings yesterday. 4 hits, struck out 7, 1 walk. Over 88 pitches, now has a 0.84 ERA. He didn't get the win yesterday, but he was dazzling once again. So we're going to zero in on Shota. We will hear from Shota Imanaga. We will hear from Craig Counsell, the manager of the Cubs, as we all try to figure out Shota Imanaga and what this is, what the Cubs are. It's a very interesting team so far to begin the season, to say the absolute least. But I do want to zero in on the end of this game again. Again, it was a Christopher Morel with a scalding single to center field. Cody Bellinger chugging around third and eventually slides in safely. And we're going to do this. We're going to do the dueling broadcasts of this because, of course, as you heard some of it in Sean Sears's intro, the elation of Pat Hughes, the elation of Boog Shambi, of course, and the game's over and we're dancing and it's all good. But when you hear the Pirates broadcast, it's not just depression. It's not just game's over, goodbye, everybody. There's some anger. They thought that they got robbed, so this is going to be interesting to hear both of these calls right now on the end of the game. Let's begin with Pat Hughes' call of the walk-off win for the Cubs yesterday.
Here's the 3-2 now from Bednar. Swinging a line drive, base hit to center. Bellinger had to hold up. Rounding third, he's heading home. The throw to the plate, he slides. He is safe. He is safe. Cubs win the ball game. The catcher, Bart, dropped the ball. Bellinger scores. Christopher Morel being mobbed out at second base. The Cubs win it 1-0. What a finish.
He dropped the ball. It was a hell of a finish for the Cubs, and that's the way it felt. But let's take a listen now to Pirates Television, right, Sean?
Sportsnet Pittsburgh, okay. Apparently.
Okay. Let's hear their perspective of the Cubs' game-winning hit yesterday at Wrigley Field.
And a base hit to center field. Taylor coming on. Runner headed to the plate. The throw is going to be... Oh, did he get him? No! Safe, he dropped the ball. Bart is claiming he had the ball and was pulling it out of his glove on the exchange, but for now... It's a walk-off, and it will stay a walk-off RBI single.
And they're going to take a look at it here, Brownie. Derek Shelton in the dugout was given the headphones thing, and why not take a look at it? You got nothing to lose here, right? Does he have the ball, and then as he's coming up, oh, yeah, he's holding it, and it looks like Bellinger knocks it out.
Yeah, he's trying to hold it up, so he said, I got him. Now, did he get him out, though?
After reviewing the call, the field has confirmed the runner is safe.
What are we doing? Are you kidding me? I don't understand it.
Oh, sorry, Brownie. Brownie was upset. That's Greg Brown on Pirates television. I know him a little bit. He's actually a really nice guy, but boy, is he fiercely loyal. Yeah, Sammy. Fiercely loyal to the Pittsburgh Pirates. And what they were arguing was that Cody Bellinger's left hand knocked the ball out of the catcher's hand. Now, it did. That did occur, but it was completely incidental and accidental. He did not try. From what I saw, and Sean and I were reviewing the video fiercely ourselves before the show started, just in case we missed something, but it didn't look to me like Cody Bellinger had any intention of trying to swat the ball out of the hands of the catcher. And if he had, that's an incredible play. Like, that's Javier Baez stuff.
Yeah, there's no way he was meaning to do it. I think he was surprised to see the ball laying next to him when he was at home plate. But we did see the home plate umpire. It looked like he was going to call Bellinger out until he saw the ball roll out. Then he's like, well, he's safe.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, man.
And then I was like, ooh, this might get interesting.
He cocked that arm back, the umpire, man. He was getting ready to do it. And, like, there would have been a replay. And I do think that that would have been one of those plays, just from watching it over and over, that he might have gotten under it anyway.
Yeah.
I think the Cubs probably still win the game, but it would have been close, and there would not have been any kind of guarantee. So I don't think Brownie's disgust is necessarily justified. I hope that he also watched the play several times and got to see that Bellinger did not try to knock the ball out. At least I don't think so. Did Belly say anything about it after the game?
I don't believe he talked specifically about that play.
Okay.
Like, he talked about it. He said he thought he was a little slow going around third.
Oh, yeah. Well, he did. He was chugging.
I was surprised when I was like, oh, he's only there? Yeah.
Those long legs and long arms chugging. You'd think he can move a little bit better just because he's got that slim thing going on. But also, let's hear from the Pirates manager,
Derek Shelton.
Okay. I thought you said Mike Schilt for a second. Derek Shelton, go.
Yeah, I mean, the umpires, all they get is a confirmed or stands or overturned. So the replay umpires will make that call, and then they just give them one of the three options. I mean, the way I saw the play is there's a presentation of the ball. There's a voluntary presentation of the ball. At anything, like when there's a fly ball in the outfield, where there's a fly ball in the infield, my interpretation is that Joey presented the ball. And, I mean, there's another runner on base, so he's presenting the ball to show the umpire that he's out. So you see him secure, you see tag, you see him take the ball out, and then there's contact with Bellinger. The way, you know, again, I see it is that's voluntary that he's taking the ball out and that it's a tag.
Involuntary. I did not think that he would try to swat that ball out. So that's Pirates manager Derek Shelton right there. It's incredible. I mean, I saw texts about this play before I even got in here today. So I know that you guys were itching to break this down. I mean, from the Cubs' perspective, when you get the game-winning hit and it's over, you just get out of there. Morrell with the hit, scoring Bellinger, and the Cubs get to go home winners. 312-644-6767. I see some of you guys jumping in here. We'll get to some of your calls here in just a little bit. But yes, we do have to talk about Shota Imanaga as well, because, oh man, I mean, it just, like, you just keep waiting or wondering if things are going to start to, I guess, normalize a little bit, come down a little bit. But and his start previous to yesterday, it felt like that a little bit, where he didn't seem to have the greatest stuff. But he was terrific again yesterday. 7 shutout innings, 4 hits, 7 strikeouts, 1 walk, again, 88 pitches. I'll tell you what's great about him, man. He has some fast innings. Like, there's always, like in the second inning yesterday, 6-pitch second inning. When he does have traffic, he doesn't seem to get flustered. He had 2 on in the 7th and struck out Michael Taylor. The near home run by Andrew McCutchen, which, you know, just went to the left of the foul pole in left field. And I love Shota's reactions to those kinds of things, because he just kind of looks at it and smiles, shakes his head, and gives that, like, whew, thank God that thing didn't go out. So Shota doing his thing. Imanaga lowered his ERA, like I said, to 0.84 through his first 9 major league starts. The lowest mark through 9 since earned run average started being tracked as a stat by baseball in 1913. He won 5 of them without a loss and was dominant again, of course, yesterday. Let's start with Craig Counsell on Shota Imanaga. Mr. Counsell, sir, are you surprised about what Shota Imanaga is doing?
As someone who's played in the league a long time, are you surprised at all that we've gone this far and nobody's been able to figure out Shota?
I mean, I think you have to say it, because when you start, like, looking at the historic, you know, stuff that he's doing, you look at the history of the game, and John was giving me some numbers. You know, when you start getting in this territory, you have to be a little surprised, for sure. But we're fortunate to watch it. It's been so much fun to watch, and you know, he just his aptitude out there, how he, his pitch making ability, his stuff, his competitiveness, they've all just been just a joy to watch. It's been, you know, so much fun to watch him.
I will say this: Craig Counsell is not prone to hyperbole in any way, shape, or form. And you can kind of tell there's that, like, this guy's been around baseball for a long time, obviously, as a player and as a manager. So he is trying to contain himself in terms of raising the plaudits to go over the top. But it is getting to that point where you say, I mean, we all know he's not going to have a 0-something ERA by the end of the season, but that's besides the point. Is Shota Imanaga going to end up being a top 5 guy for Cy Young by the end of the season? That's the long view you could take. That's what you have to start to potentially anticipate or wonder in your brain, if that is the case with Shota Imanaga. And, man, we went through this last year, or maybe I'll just point the thumb and say I went through this last year with Justin Steele, to where every start was just spectacular in that first half of the season, the first couple of months especially. I was very skeptical. The reason I was skeptical of Justin Steele is because everybody was saying that he was going to be good out of the gates based on what he had done the previous year. And I am always just a little bit skeptical when things happen, when the lights are off and your team is bad and there's no pressure and the lights are out, so to speak. And that's the way it was for Justin Steele. But we went through this last year with him, start after start after start after start. And then at some point in time, you just have to say, okay, this guy is really good. This is who he is. And guess what? Justin Steele ended up being top 5 for the Cy Young last year. I don't know if I'm ready to say that with Shota Imanaga yet, because at some point in time, he's probably going to struggle. I mean, there's going to be that period, and we'll see if he can overcome that and adjust to it. But I'm certainly not counting out the possibility that he's top 5 for Cy Young eventually. I mean, heck, we could do this with Javier Assad as well, because right now he would be in the mix for that. These are the Cubs' 2 most valuable players to begin the season. So it is fascinating to watch what Shota Imanaga has done. Before I jump on a couple of your calls, let's hear from Shota Imanaga. The same question Are you surprised, sir, about what you are doing? This is through his interpreter.
So talking about tough starts, even today I felt like there was a couple of tough situations where the defense made fantastic plays. And so I know that there has been a couple of tough situations so far in the season. So I'll just continue and keep doing better.
Yeah, I watched a lot of that press conference live, and he wasn't, at least he said he's not really paying attention to the statistics and the historical value. I guess he doesn't have to because everybody else is going to tell him about it, but I think he has the right attitude, stay in the present, and just enjoy it. And maybe that's the message to Cubs fans and baseball fans, and maybe I should just accept that as a just enjoy what's going on with Shota Imanaga and the fact that it's working, because you know how we are as radio hosts and you as Cubs fans. If Shota had a start that was opposite of this in any way, shape, or form, then you're like, oh, man, this is a bad signing. What the hell's going on with the Shota Imanaga guy who was supposed to help this team? And right now, he is not only the MVP of this team, he has kept this team in order as well. Cubs are 26-21, two games out of first place. The Brewers did win yesterday as well, but what he has done for this team so far, and I take the beginning of seasons very seriously, has been just irreplaceable so far for the Cubs this year. 312-644-6767 is the number. We've got Jim Deshays coming up in a bit, but we've got some time to take a couple of your calls before Jimmy D comes on with us. You know what, Sean? Bring me Dave and Darian. Dave from Darian, you're on the score. What's going on, man?
Hey, Mark. Love when you're on, buddy.
Thanks.
So I just wanted to make a couple of comments quickly about yesterday's call. It was interesting, and I love the fact that you got a homer perspective. You're never going to get away from that. Everybody's subjective, right? So the other thing I mentioned, though, I was listening carefully to the verbiage. When the umpires made that call or reviewed it, they said the call's confirmed. And to me, that says New York looked at it and said not just the call stands, there wasn't enough to overturn it, but they clearly saw something. And I think Bellinger actually got his foot in. Onto the plate before the tag is applied. That was just my
I think so
view,
too.
Of course,
I agree. Yeah. I agree with that, Dave. Even in real time, I agree with that.
Yeah. And secondly, I heard a guy in the score predict the other day that the Cubs are going to win the World Series, which to me is I'm optimistic, but I wasn't over the moon with them this year. But it is interesting the depth on this squad, considering they've been a mash unit. And they've been subjected to how many injuries have we had, significant injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And they've still been able to weather the storm. And they really are loaded at the minor league level. And it would be interesting to see what Jed does at the trading deadline, too. I think there's some major moves coming for this team if they continue to stay in contention. And obviously, they're playing quite well, but they need some help. And I think, you know, with the bullpen and offensively, they've been very average lately, and it would be interesting to get your perspective on that moving forward.
Yeah, man. Thanks, Dave. I appreciate the call and the kind words as well. Well, there's one name that we'll focus on in terms of getting help at the major league level, and that is Cade Horton, as you know, one of their top prospects as a pitcher. He could be coming soon, that's for sure. And to your point, like, I don't know. I don't look at the Cubs as winning the World Series this year. I really, that's not where I have my sights set for the Cubs this year. But to your point about keeping this team together and the depth that it has shown, the Cubs began the season without, in theory, their two of their top pitchers, and certainly their ace in Justin Steele, who has struggled, but I think Steele's going to get his bleep together. I do believe that, but the guy that's pitching today, Jameson Taillon, began the day on the season on the DL as well. So you go into a season, I mean, just keep it right there. And then you lose Seiya for a little while. You lose Cody Bellinger, maybe your best overall offensive player. Right now, man, watching, looking at second and shortstop, I got to say, for the most part, Miles Mastroboni has been pretty good at shortstop. There was the play yesterday where he kind of sat back on a routine ground ball, and the Pirates player beat it out. He sat back. He needed to move in a little bit, know the base runner. But for the most part, Master Boney has surprised me with his ease over at shortstop. Madrigal playing second base. So you have been playing lately with, you know, Dansby Swanson last year for half of the season, I thought was your absolute best player. He has had a rough and tumble start to the season offensively and defensively. He's been doing things that have surprised me with a lot of low throws from short to first. It reminds me a little bit of a stretch that Addison Russell went through back in 2016 where he just could not get the, remember all those low throws in the dirt and Rizzo having to scoop him, and Michael Bush has just been average over at first in terms of the scoop. I think that he's getting better, but the Cubs have managed to stay afloat in the division and be right there just a couple of games behind the Milwaukee Brewers. Paul in Valpo, what's going on, Paul? You're on the Score.
Hey, good morning, Mark. I like the previous caller said, I think they're going to make some moves, and you know, the minor league system is stocked. But one thing I just can't, you just mentioned a bunch of players in the way that hasn't been injured or maybe he's injured mentally is Ian Happ. I cannot stand to watch him back. That was the best thing to watch a Cubs game in those couple of days that Council gave him off. I know with his contract, they're not getting rid of him, but what about bring up a Brennan Davis who is on fire in AAA right now? He's 24 years old. He's not one of the younger prospects where you might not want to rush. He's been around. He's had some injury issues. But catch him while he's hot and give Happ some real days off. I mean, he's good defensively, but he's a left fielder that has two home runs and 14 RBIs. It's painful to watch him bat. We talk a lot about the bullpen and other things that have kind of sidetracked his team, injuries, but he is just, you can't have him in the lineup.
Yeah, no, I agree because I don't think he's had a hit since the home run, possibly. Remember, he took the two mental days off, the mental break, as they call it, the benching. And he comes back, gets a home run. I don't know. In that game, I remember, it was the Thursday game. Pirates win over the Cubs 5-4. And, yeah, he hits the early home run. And that I know he didn't have another hit that day because I remember the eighth inning, the Cubs had second and third with nobody out, and they only got one run out of it. And I don't think it was Happ that got on.
He did get a hit on the 17th.
Okay.
So in that 9-3 loss.
What have I told you about correcting me, Sean? I got a thing over here. You know what I'm saying? No, I appreciate that. So he has had one hit since the home run?
Yes, one hit since the home run.
Okay. So, yeah, like it, because everybody's sort of dwelling on that. Like, okay, we have to, like, there were three more at-bats in that game. He gets the one hit in the 9-3 loss to the Pirates. That was the Skeens game.
Yeah.
Skeens. The 11 strikeouts and one walk. And by the way, one of the reasons that we're having PCA on, not only do Sean Sears and I love him, how about that contact he made against Paul Skeens?
Yeah.
Seven straight strikeouts and then a ground out, the most important ground out.
We got
out.
A ball in play, baby. Look out now.
I was like, thank God. I was like, come on, Paul Skeens. You can't strike everybody out. Don't do that. Don't do that to yourself.
He sure as heck tried, man.
Oh, yeah. Do you think he would have gotten a no-hitter?
Ooh.
I mean, the Cubs were starting to make contact off of him. Not anything. They weren't squaring it up, but they were starting to hit the baseball. And he goes six shutout innings, and they pulled him. I mean, I knew they were going to do that.
I think Shelton pulled him at the right time. I feel like the seventh inning coming along here, maybe a couple walks, suddenly a single turns into a two-run play. I felt like that was coming. So right time to pull him.
Yeah.
He had the stuff to do it, though, for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible stuff. I was talking about this a little bit yesterday. We all like to place a name, a comp, a parallel with these guys, and I certainly go the Mark Pryor route, and that specifically is because Mark Pryor had his first two starts against the Pittsburgh Pirates, and he was dazzling in both of them. His debut, Pryor's, in May of 2022, just terrific. And so that's when Pryor was called up. Same thing for Paul Skeens, called up in May, his first two starts against the Cubs, and they were absolutely dazzling starts. I just hope Paul Skeens stays healthy. It seems like these guys never do, including the tragic story of Mark Pryor. Let's take our first break here on Hit and Run. I get to be here until 12:45. Coming up Next, we will talk to Jim Deshays, Cubs TV broadcaster for the Marquee Sports Network. Coming up next right here on The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
Hey, bada, 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 so we bada. Hey, bada, 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 so we bada. Kennedy, 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 so we bada.
On 670, The Score.
This is where Christopher Morel has gotten so much better to control these moments. Stay in the at-bat and not expand. Not easy to do.
Belly at second, one down. 3-2. Line drive, base hit center field. Bellinger to third, on his way home. Here's the throw, the tag. Safe! Ball game, Cubs win.
Chris Conroy, the home plate umpire, was starting to crank that right arm like he was going to ring him up. Then he got better of it. Big time from Christopher Morel.
Put that arm down, Conroy. Safe. Great call by Boog Chombi and Jim Deshays on the Marquee Sports Network. Cubs win. Cubs win. 1-0 over the Pittsburgh Pirates. Shota Imanaga put on a show. But that final play, man, that is perfect for a beautiful Saturday at Wrigley Field. Welcome back into Hit and Run. I am Mark Grody, in for Matt Spiegel. We're going to talk to Pete Crow Armstrong in 1 hour from now, 10:30. We'll also talk to Speaks, who I assume is probably already at the ballpark because he's doing pre and post starting at 12:45 today, and then he gets to do some play-by-play in the fifth inning as well. But one of the guys that I wanted to have on this show, even before the Cubs game started, was Jim Deshays. Jim Deshays, Cubs TV broadcaster for the Marquee Sports Network. He is on X at Jim Deshays, D-E-S-H-A-I-E-S. I like to spell that because it is just a little bit complicated. And Jim Deshays joins us right now on the Circa Sports Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. What's going on, Jim? How are you, man?
Hi, Mark. I'm great. Yeah, that name, it took me to about the third grade before I could spell it correctly. So I don't know what all those freaking vowels are doing in there for no reason. But
seriously,
it
man.
Is what it is. Yeah,
it is rough. I bet that thing is a bitch on spell check, too. It probably doesn't.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of AYS shows up.
Yeah, I almost, Jim, stumbled through it while I was reading. I'm like, oh, my God, that's right. There's an E before the S and an A and an I, all of those vowels. But I loved your call, man, yesterday because I saw the same thing you did, and that's the home plate umpire. He was about to bark and out, and you know it was going to go to replay. So it was just a relief, like I said, when you see that ball squirt out, just this relief, I think, came over everybody at Wrigley Field.
Yeah, it was a weird play because the ball kind of pops out of his throwing hand kind of after the play, but it's considered, you know, a continuation of the whole play. So they got it right. I kind of, the more we looked at the replay, I think he beat the tag anyway. It looked to me like he got the toe there just before the tag was applied. But either way, a heck of a win and a heck of a performance by Imanaga.
Unbelievable. I mean, what do you make of Imanaga?
Yeah, well, this whole notion that, you know, it's going to be tough to transition from Japan to the States. Well, so much for that.
Yeah.
He's been brilliant. You know, the reputation we heard when he came over was, you know, really good control. He can pitch to the top of the zone with a four-seam fastball, and he's got a swing and miss splitter. And it seemed to me like the emphasis was on the split finger pitch. And what we're realizing is that four-seam fastball is probably his best weapon. It reminds me of Fernando Valenzuela, Fernando Mania, when he went nuts his rookie year when he had like seven shutouts through his first eight or nine starts. And I think, you know, the national baseball audience is starting to get caught up in Imanaga, and clearly it's a thing here in Chicago. And we'll just see how long he can ride it.
How about his demeanor on the mound, too? He looks like a guy who, and we haven't seen him struggle yet, so I don't know if he's going to have those smiles if he does get to the point of struggling. But there's a point in the game yesterday where Andrew McCutchen wallops one to left field. Well, foul But Imanaga just looked at it and had that that look of relief and kind of a smile and shaking his head. You don't usually see that sort of playfulness out of starting pitchers like you do with him.
Yeah, we're all taught to be very stoic and don't get caught up in the emotions of the game. But yeah, he clearly does. So I'd imagine if he ever does have a bad one, we're going to see that on his face as well. But yeah, he's very expressive. He has a lot of personality. So for that reason, as well as the performance, I think fans have fallen in love with him.
Yeah, no doubt about it. There was Taylor McGregor had a great report, and you followed up on it as well. But she was talking about the idea of what she called and what you call Shota Imanaga's invisible fastball. Can you explain that concept or what you guys are talking about with that?
Yeah, that idea that the players call it the invisible. It's basically when a guy who's throwing what is, by velocity, by today's standards, is a tick or two below major league average, but still able to get swings and misses and bad contact in the strike zone. It's just the characteristics of that pitch, the backspin on the four-seam fastball that the hitter expects this ball to kind of go down as it approaches the hitting zone because of gravity, and if we want to get all sciencey here. But when you have a lot of backspin on a four-seam fastball, it defies gravity to an extent. So it doesn't actually rise, but it stays on plane longer, and guys are constantly underneath it. And it's very difficult as a hitter to convince yourself to take a swing path that's over the top of the baseball. But that's what you have to do to hit it squarely.
Yeah, that was great. We'll actually play some of that a little bit later on for the audience that didn't get a chance to hear that on the Marquee Sports Network. We are talking to Cubs broadcaster Jim DeShays. I'm Mark Grody, sitting in for Matt Spiegel on Hit and Run, who will be doing pre and post a little bit later on, 12:45, right here on the Score in the final game of this very entertaining series between the Cubs and the Pirates. And that's exactly what this series has been. I mean, a close one on Thursday. That was the Justin Steele game where the Pirates end up beating the Cubs 5-4. The Friday entertainment, man. I mean, in terms of Paul Skenes, what he did, Pirates go on to win that game 9-3. Let's talk a little bit about some of the things that went down in that game. First of all, I mean, I have to ask you about your impressions of Paul Skenes and the 11th strikeout performance and the 7 straight before the PCA ground out.
Yeah, he's a beast, and he's going to be tough to deal with for years to come as long as he stays healthy. As a matter of fact, he and the Jones kid who worked game one of that series both.
Yeah, really good.
The Pirates, it's hard not to be bullish on the future of the Pirates, that 1-2 punch. Mitch Keller goes today. I think Keller's only 28-ish, and he's turned into a really good starting pitcher. So, their position players are a little bit behind. But if they can add a couple bats, they're going to be really interesting. Skenes is it reminds me of Strasburg with all the hype when Strasburg first came up, and Strasburg delivered. You probably recall 14 strikeouts in his debut against the Pirates, and it was everybody in the industry was glued to their TVs watching that game, and the stuff was electric. And that's the same thing with Skenes, because the fastball gets all the headlines, but the secondary pitches are, that splinker, the half splitter, half sinker he throws at 95 is devastating. His slider's really good. He's shown a good changeup. So for a kid who's, 21 years old, he's the complete package, and he seems really poised out there. So I don't think there's going to be much of a learning curve. This guy's, he's going to be at the top of the game. He's just a stud.
Just hope he stays healthy, man. I mean, I was at an event earlier this week in Chicago, and Jack McDowell just happened to be there. Jack McDowell has opinions on everything these days, but I kind of bought into his opinion about why, pitchers, we're all wondering, why do these pitchers get hurt? And it seems like it's guys like Strasburg and Mark Pryor and these guys that eventually just have really nasty injuries that in some cases shorten their careers. But McDowell's take was that, guys are just throwing too hard, that they are just maxing out on every pitch. And this is what base GMs and managers desire to have. Do you have a theory on it? And do you think Skenes has the right mechanics, I suppose, to stay healthy? And I know that's not everything.
Yeah, I do agree that velocity is part of the problem, velocity and spin, and this is just my opinion. I don't have any medical data to back it up. But I don't think it's a case where managers and general managers are asking pitchers to chase velocity. Pitchers are chasing velocity because velocity gets people out. And as a pitcher, as a competitor, if you have the ability to throw 100 miles an hour, you're going to throw 100 miles an hour. That's just human nature. I think the challenge going forward is recognizing that. What do teams do to try to better protect pitchers? We've gotten so much better about studying biomechanics and load management. And I think maybe as much as we grouse about pitch counts, whether it's pitch counts or extra days rest between starts, I think that's one way to possibly preserve starting pitching. Because we love the ace, right? We want to look, well, here's an old guy, look in the morning paper or look on the internet for the pitching matchup and go, oh, you know, Skeens is going against Justin Steele today. I'm going to try to get a ticket to that game.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's when I was a kid, that was a thing. We looked at the pitching matchups and, hey, Seaver's going in Montreal tonight. Dad, let's go. I think the way to and when that guy only goes five innings, we're disappointed. So I think the way to maybe get more out of our starters is to just pitch them less frequently, every sixth day or whatever, or find a couple days extra rest with if they're coming off a start where they threw, 110 pitches or really had to labor to get through the start. Maybe that's one way to fix it. And, they're doing all kinds of other studies and they're, plugging guys into machines and they're getting all kinds of reads on how their body reacts to certain situations. But I don't think we can ask guys with the golden arms not to try to throw as hard as they can throw.
Yeah, it's really, really tough like that. And we know that there's tons of that in the bullpen these days, and the Cubs are obviously no exception to that. What do you make of this Cubs season? It's really hard to characterize just because of all the injuries. And I want to say that the Cubs at 26-21, that because they've had all these injuries and guys in and out of the lineup, you begin the season with maybe your two best pitchers on the DL, that once they get this whole thing together, they're going to absolutely blast off. But then on the other side, there's been, guys like Dansby Swanson, who's had a rough start to the season. Edward Alzolay, same thing. Kyle Hendricks as well. So how do you characterize this team, and how do you see it going forward?
Yeah, I think it's kind of remarkable they are where they are, given some of the performances and the injuries that they've had to deal with. So, yeah, one way to look at it is, if these guys return to form and they get healthy, you have the makings of a really good ball club. I think they're probably the best team in the division. I'm a little bit surprised that Milwaukee has played as well as they have played. Yeah. So, we're past the quarter pole in the season, so you have to kind of start to believe that they're for real. I'm not too worked up about anybody else in the division. So, this could play out. Cubs, Brewers, all the way to the finish line. Dansby's going to hit better, obviously, than what he's shown. Ian Happ's going to hit better than what he has shown. Defensively, it's been a little wobbly, and that's surprising. Hopefully that gets tightened up going forward. I think starting pitching is a strength. The bullpen remains a question. So that's, I'm sure that's the one thing that Jed and Carter are out there, scanning the waiver wires and checking in with clubs all the time, clubs that are likely to be sellers at the deadline to see who's available. But I would suspect a couple of moves at some point to bolster the bullpen.
I've been talking about Kyle Hendricks the last couple of days, and the thing that comes up when we discuss Kyle Hendricks, and I think it's the correct word, it's a complicated situation because for a couple of reasons. Because of the resume of what Kyle Hendricks has meant to the Cubs, and because we know that Hendricks always hits a spot during the season where you're like, oh man, is this guy lost it? Is this low velocity finally catching up with him? And then he becomes brilliant again. He gave up 7 runs the other day in the Paul Skeens game, over 4 2/3, 4 strikeouts, gave up a home run. How would you handle Kyle Hendricks if you were Craig Counsell?
Yeah, I would give him more time. They're going to need it. They need starting pitching. They need somebody to go out there, Wicks is starting to get healthy. Smiley's coming back and may be an option. So, the leash won't be, never ending. But the thing that intrigues me about Hendricks is when I look at his velo, it's the same as last year. When I look at the action on his changeup, it looks like Kyle Hendricks. So the stuff with which he has pitched to be a very good pitcher for a very long time seems to still be there. He's had a few starts where he's just made a lot of mistakes over the middle of the plate and gotten hurt. Two starts ago, he didn't. I was really encouraged by his last start against Pittsburgh, in Pittsburgh. And then he made a couple mistakes the other day and paid for it. And they also hit, you know, they hit some balls off the end of the bat, you know, some little flares that dropped in, some soft ground balls that got through. He wasn't great, but he was better than what those numbers were. His line at the end of the day, he pitched better than that line. So, you know, and he seems to, you know, he's very good at understanding his own performance. And he said so after the game, because honestly, he goes, it's kind of weird to say this, but I only think I made a couple of mistakes. And he's also the guy that'll tell you if he ends up with a 7-inning, 1-run performance, he'll go, man, I got lucky today. I gave up a lot of hard contact and got away with it.
That's true.
So it's not like he's, you know, some guys try to talk their, you know, try to talk through the press to try to convince themselves or their manager that he's not that guy. He honestly believes that he, you know, he was a lot better the other day than the numbers indicate. And I agree with them. The problem is when you don't generate a lot of swings and misses and you don't get strikeouts, you do become vulnerable to ball and play luck. And, you know, I think that's taken a bite out of him, as well as, you know, some subpar performances in the long ball. But I'm, you know, I still think he's got a chance to bounce back and ending up having a pretty productive year.
Yeah, I mean, ironically, I thought we were going to see vintage Hendricks in that Pirates game because he did give up the leadoff single followed by three straight groundouts. I'm like, okay, here we go. This is going to be, you know, contact guy versus strikeout guy, right?
Yeah, it was a fun matchup. I was geeked up for it because you got the guy throwing 101 and then you got the professor out there doing his thing with the 88 mile an hour fastball and you know, all the experience versus the newbie. And, you know, obviously velocity won out in that one.
Last guy I want to ask you about, because Sean Sears tells me I have to hang up now and let you go. I'm selling out Sean Sears over there. You mentioned Christopher Morel saying that with that hit he had yesterday, I think it was a 2-strike count. And you mentioned control the moment, and that's what it is for Christopher Morel. If he does continue to control the moment, what can this guy be?
Yeah, I mean, if he forces pitchers into the strike zone, he does so much damage. And, you know, his strikeout rate is way down from last year to this year. It's got to be one of the biggest drops in MLB. It's been really impressive. You know, that at-bat he took yesterday a couple of years ago, you know, he's swinging wildly at something off the plate.
Yep.
But he didn't, and he forced. I was surprised they threw a pitch as close to the zone as they did on the game-winning base hit. They had a base open. I thought they'd throw another chase pitch and try to get him to expand. But, you know, they threw it out over the plate a little bit, and he put a real good swing out. So, the discipline has improved greatly, and you couple that with, the bat speed, the power, he's going to be able to do a lot of damage. I don't think he's ever going to be a high average hitter, but he's going to do a lot of damage.
Jim, thanks a lot for your time. Always appreciate when you come on. Have a great broadcast today, and say hi to Matt Spiegel, Cubs broadcaster, for us, will you?
I will do that indeed, Mark. Good to be with you, and I'll look for a little trivia from Spiegs.
All right, man. I'll talk to you later, Jim.
All right, be well.
Yep, that is Jim Deshays, one of the greats in that Cubs booth. He is, as you hear him, he is just like that. In my 3 years doing the Cubs pre and post, he was just a steady, steady force in that booth and on the buses and the planes and the hotels. Jim Deshays of the Marquee Sports Network. Coming up at 10:30, Pete Crow Armstrong. More Hit and Run next on The Score.
Hit and Run with Mark Grody on 670 The Score.
Soto starting to feel it for the Yankees. We are all tied up at first, one apiece. First 1-2-3 inning of the fourth, and Juan Soto can wave that one goodbye. His second home run of the day. And it is scary how locked in Juan Soto is right now.
White Sox got the full Yankees experience yesterday. They lose to the Bronx Bombers 6-1 the final score. John Schriffen on the call on NBC Sports Chicago. Juan Soto, 4-for-4 with a couple of home runs. It was a rough second start for Brad Keller as he gave up 4 home runs in this game. And one thing I noticed watching that game is there were probably about 3 separate times where Yankees hitters maybe like popped out against Brad Keller or grounded out or maybe even struck out. And they did the pound the bat thing, you know, wanted to break the bat over their knee, which pisses off pitchers. I mean, that's that they do look at that as being shown up, but that tells you that Yankees lineup was chomping at the bit to get up to the plate to face this guy.
Well, everything was leaving, man. Like, yeah. Jose Trevino's home run was like 317.
Oh, that got out. That was just a smack to left field to, you know, 318 in left field. He was one of the guys. Luis Trevino got a home run, and then on another at-bat, he pops out and bangs the bat down. Like he felt he... The Yankees hitters felt they were entitled to home runs against Brad Keller.
Give us that 321, man. Come on.
Yeah, that's a bad sign when he's out there. And then the antithesis was Luis Gil, spelled G-I-L, by the way. 14 strikeouts over 6 innings, 98 pitches. At one point, he struck out 7 White Sox in a row, also retired 11 straight at one point. So it was just a dominant game in a lot of ways for the Yankees, 6-1 over the White Sox. Sox and Yankees rematch today. Good pitching matchup. Chris Flexen against Carlos Rodon.
We've heard of him before.
Yeah, Carlos Rodon. What's he doing so far this year? 4-2 with a 3.31 ERA. We'll talk more White Sox a little bit later on. Like I said, I was at a White Sox event earlier this week at the Chicago History Museum. I want to talk a little bit about that. And the guy who also threw out the first pitch at the Yankees-White Sox game, who Yankees fans love and White Sox fans love. So we'll get into that in a little bit. But I want to ask Cubs fans a question here, too. I sort of got into it with Jim DeShays in asking about how the Cubs have done what they have done. Number one, and maybe this is an easy question, who has been the most valuable player for the Cubs so far in this 26-21 season? And what do you see for the Cubs, then, let's say, middle of the summer when baseball is ruling, like in July or so before Bears training camp? Where do you think this Cubs team will be? Do you think they're still going to be hanging around 26-21, or do you think they're going to blast off? Right now is a good time to get in. 312-644-6767. You could text or call. Pete Crow Armstrong coming our way at 10:30 as well. It's Hit and Run with Mark Grody on the Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or track pick number one.
number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.